This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and today our special guest is Dr. Dave Balzenberger, professor and department head at Texas A&M. We're focusing on research regarding hemp production. This is pretty interesting. So hang around and hear what Dr. Balzenberger has to share with us today. First off, let's look at diesel prices nationwide. Meg Freeburn in D.C. says,
the U.S. average retail price for on-highway diesel fuel rose to $3.66 a gallon on Monday. That's up 4.4 cents from a week ago based on the weekly price survey by the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Diesel prices were highest in the West Coast region at $4.42 a gallon, up 4.8 cents from a week ago. Prices were lowest in the Gulf Coast region at $3.38 a gallon.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Dr. David Balzenberger, who is a professor and department head at Texas A&M College Station. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here today to talk with you, Tony.
Well, let's start with an introduction for those who may not have met you in the past, or maybe they've met you in the past, and it's just a good general reminder. Tell us about your path of growing up and ending up there in College Station at A&M.
Sure. I grew up on a farm in western Nebraska on the Colorado-Wyoming line at high elevation. After completing a PhD in New Mexico State, I moved to the University of Florida, where I was a forage crops breeder and worked with various forages and cover crops there. I then moved to the University of Nebraska, where I worked as an alternative crops breeder at the Panhandle Research and Extension Center, and worked a lot with oilseed crops, birdseed crops, and just new crops that could diversify the ag income. When I moved to Texas A&M, I came here as department head of the Soil and Crop Science Department. It's a large department which covers a lot of areas in soil science, agronomy, plant breeding, and I function primarily as department head. But as we face this opportunity with hemp, some of my experience with developing alternative crops came into play. And so as the laws changed in Texas, I started to coordinate our hemp effort, and it's based on a lot of different faculty doing a lot of different things, but I try to provide some overall coordination for that program.
Talk about research in hemp, and I heard it said by a couple of researchers recently, I believe from Cornell and within USDA, the hemp research basically has been stuck back in the 40s, because of federal regulations. So is this, I guess, a great awakening for research in hemp?
Yes, I think it is. I frequently cite the example that that soybeans were hardly a crop in the United States when hemp became illegal and we quit growing it. And it's become our largest crop. And so as you have those kinds of transitions, hemp hasn't been part of it because hemp versus marijuana wasn't recognized as different until the laws changed just a couple of years ago.
Maybe we ought to step back and it's like saying sustainable. We can say things are sustainable, but we also have to stop and define what sustainability really means. And so maybe that would be a good place to start as we talk about hemp and what we're talking about as a crop and the end uses. I would think there are probably quite a few different definitions when we're trying to identify hemp.
Well, actually, there's only one that's legal, and that's the cannabis sativa plant, with less than 0.3% THC. And a little background, THC is the active ingredient in cannabis sativa or marijuana that causes the effects, the aura. And consequently, in order to grow it as a legal crop, it has to be at 0.3% THC or less. As you're buying street marijuana, typically those THC levels are going to run over 25% and many times around 30%. But hemp is only going to be 0.3% THC.
For those who've wanted or at least expressed interest in growing hemp, that has been a, no pun intended here, but a very hot topic, because if you've got a hot field, one that's testing higher than that legal limit, you've suddenly got a crop that's worth nothing. It actually could cost you to have that crop. So have we seen some research on trying to help producers with that angle?
Absolutely. There's some straightforward breeding programs where we are trying to select for lines that will not run hot, but we're also utilizing what we call new genetics, new genetic technology. And the CRISPR-Cas9 system has started to be used on all of our major crops to move genes around and to have them perform differently. So whether it's a different fatty acid composition in soybeans, or whether it's a higher yield potential in corn, we're using the CRISPR-Cas9 system quite extensively. We have started to utilize that system to block THC production in cannabis sativa, and therefore make sure that the plants that are produced are hemp.
Maybe we ought to step now to the end of the road here in our conversation on hemp. We've talked about the growing side of it and some of the legalities of it. But what about the end result? If we're going to grow a crop, how are we going to utilize it? And what's the future look like for hemp production here in the U.S.?
Well, there are three major uses for hemp, and we have slightly different production technologies and end utilization for the three types. We talk about hemp grain, which can be used as a feed grain. It has oil, a fairly high oil percentage in it, that has favorable types of oil for human health. And consequently, hemp hearts and parts of the hemp oil have a real possibility in the human food and the pet food market. The second is the cannabinoid production. THC is one particular type of cannabinoid, but there are many related compounds, CBD, CBG, and many others. There are also terpenes in hemp that cause it to smell and have flavorings that can be used as natural ingredients in other foods. And so exploring those uses of the chemical properties, both for medicine, treating things like post-traumatic stress, swelling pain, nausea in cancer patients, those kinds of things can all be explored. But if we're really going to grow a large acreage of hemp, we have to utilize it as a fiber crop. It has a very long fiber as part of the stem. That's where the fiber comes from, that has been used for many years to sail for sails and parachutes. It's why we grew some during World War II, was to make sure we had enough for parachutes and things like that. But it's also used for rope. There's inner part of it, of that stem, that has other properties that can be used there as a bulking agent. And so those two uses are probably where we will see the big acreage, and that will require the development of processing facilities to handle the hemp fiber. you hit kind of a chicken and egg thing, because nobody wants to put in a processing facility until there's enough acres, and nobody wants to grow enough acres until there's enough market. And we're starting a step back with our research and finding varieties that will work well so that we can be relatively sure that we can provide consistent production. I think of this as a 10-year path. Entrepreneurs always divide by 10, and so they think of it as a 1-year path. But somewhere between 1 and 10 years, we expect a lot of commercialization of hemp fiber for special uses in the U.S.
We've talked a lot about the crop and growing it. And our conversation today is occurring when now I believe 75% of the state, if not more, is in drought conditions. So is that part of the landscape that we're keeping in mind as we start the research into formulating seeds, finding ways to grow it in multiple environments?
We're always interested in environmental adaptation, and heat and drought are always a part of Texas crop production. That having been said, good hemp production requires some water. And so even though it's quite drought resistant, better yields and better quality will be achieved with timely rains or irrigation.
This is an exciting conversation, and I appreciate you taking the time to update us on it and give us a little bit of a timeline there as well. So let's not wait 10 years to have you back on the air. Will you come back and see us soon?
I will be happy to give an update, because we have a lot of exciting research going on with this crop right now, from the breeding and the genetics to reduce the THC to just getting varieties that are adapted and have the right photoperiod to grow in the South. We're also working on some of those end-use products, how we can make stronger concrete by blending in the hemp fiber, how we can make building products using the hemp fiber. So there are a lot of exciting things that are coming down the pike, and we look forward to being back on and talking about those.
Professor and department head at Texas A&M University, Dr. David Baltensperger, on today's Agribusiness Report.
If this were just any door, and this were just any ignition, connected to just any transmission, in just any vehicle, then perhaps it would be okay to buy it from just anyone. But this is not just any car. It's a certified pre-owned Mercedes-Benz. Every detail has been inspected and road tested by highly skilled Mercedes-Benz technicians. And it's all backed by an unlimited mileage warranty for up to 5 years, which makes the decision of where to buy one simple. Your authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Dr. David Baltensperger with Texas A&M.
Control your growing environment like never before with a Sunflower 1436 disc harrow. With a design that is fine-tuned to work precisely and easily, you can give each seed its best shot at a healthy return. Whatever your soil type or tillage practice, the Sunflower line of disc harrows is your best choice for rugged, reliable performance. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
At the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Denver, we caught up with Dr. Kerry Ryan, pet cloning and genetic preservation expert with Viagen in Cedar Park, Texas.
We've been working with dogs and cats for 3 years. We're the only company in the United States that clones dogs and the only company in the world that clones cats. And we've also been cloning horses and livestock for about 15 years. So I think this will be here to stay. And I think as we get better and better at it, the costs will come down and people will be more and more interested in it.
There's more information at avma.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to our comprehensive look at agribusiness, news, markets, and weather This is the Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
The Cattle Industry Convention and NCBA Trade Show is the oldest and largest event in the beef cattle industry, and we're headed to Houston, February 1st through the 3rd. Everything's bigger in Texas, so you can't afford to miss the massive NCBA Trade Show. Engaging speakers, outstanding education, all for the beef cattle industry. We've gone to Texas for CattleCon 2022, February 1st through the 3rd. Visit convention.ncba.org for more.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
It's a new partnership to grow more cover crops in our country and, in turn, improve soil health.
It's an opportunity for us to use our collective resources, our innovative solutions, and USDA resources to expand significantly the opportunity for cover crops.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack explained this new collaboration, Farmers for Soil Health, on Monday during the American Farm Bureau Federation Convention in Atlanta.
Working with the United Soybean Board, the National Corn Growers Association, the National Pork Board, the National Association of Conservation Districts, the Soil Health Institute, and the Sustainability Consortium, we're announcing a goal of doubling the number of cover crop acres to 30 million acres by 2030. And we're excited about the opportunity to use conservation assistance and help to do so. We're announcing today in 11 states roughly $38 million to begin that process of expanding incentives and encouraging additional cover crop activity.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.
It's the Agribusiness Report.